Certainly, my experience being in the group was it was a really nice way of connecting with some people, some new people, sharing a little bit, and also that making me having a chance to reflect on my own experience, make some of that more conscious, including the fact that I think I'm still arriving on the retreat, actually, that I've had some quite deep, still spacious meditations, but there's also part of me that's still not quite fully on the retreat, that's still thinking about some other things, which I imagine might be there for some of you. So we're now going to have a period of meditation, and then after the meditation, we're going to have a space for questions and answers, a bit of inquiry about practice. You could mention or share anything that you've experienced in any of the meditations or on the retreat so far, what's been going on in your practice so far. But I'll give you the invitation to sort of try and be based in your experience. Anyway. If you just want to settle down, and we'll have a short period of meditation. So we'll meditate for about 20 minutes. So as you listen to the sound of the bowl, maybe just having that experience of this external sound, your hearing sense, and then hearing the sound in your body, in your mind. Sound is just vibration. And as the vibrations fade away, we enter into a quieter place. So just arriving sometimes we can think that we just arrive once and then we're there at a certain place, present. But actually, it can be more like a process, arriving and arriving and arriving, different levels of experience. Arriving at different stages. We're arriving in different places. Having that sense of just arriving now, this moment, in our bodies, in our meditation posture. Arriving in this particular place we're inhabiting in the world. Feeling our connection with the ground below. Aware of the space we're taking up in the world right now, a physical space. Also arriving into this shared virtual space. Arriving into this community, fellow practitioners. Arriving on the retreat. Particularly that sense of homecoming, arriving in the body, inhabiting our body. Seeing if there is any sense of ease just being in our body right now, just sitting, just breathing, just being. Just turning towards our experience, whatever it may be, open. Maybe there's some discomfort or pain in our body right now. We just turn towards it, be with it with an attitude of tenderness and care. Breathing into it. Leaning into it, softening. Including it as part of our experience, but not the whole of our experience. Sometimes we think we need to separate different aspects of our experience, our practice, into different meditations. Focus on the body, focus on the breath, focus on kindness and compassion, focus on insight. Those separations aren't real. All are present in any meditation. It's just whether or not we realize it, open to it. So through our awareness of the body, kindness and care, experience everything through the body. So just allowing yourself to be with your body as it is right now. Noticing what you're experiencing moment by moment, sensations coming and going. It may also include some pleasant, enjoyable sensations. Just shifting your attention. Noticing if there is anything enjoyable. As you sit here, breathing in, breathing out. Bodies like to breathe. Does it feel like right now, just sitting, being a breathing body? Nothing else to do, just sitting, just breathing, just being. Just being aware of each breath. Your breathing body. As long as we're alive, we're breathing the breath that keeps us alive. Breath that connects us with the world, with other living beings. If possible, just to be open, relaxed, just breathing in, breathing out, sensitive to the body, its movements, its sensations. Noticing the whole body breathing. Where can you feel the breath in your body right now? Often we focus more on where we feel the breath entering, leaving the body. Nostrils, the mouth, the throat. That's the lungs. Feeling that gentle expansion, contraction around the lungs and the rib cage. Sides of the body, the back of the body. Feel the breath in the back of your body. Rise and fall of the chest. Move the diaphragm, the belly. And just remembering. Just like this morning, breathing to the pelvis. Breathing into the groin. Broadening your awareness, including your whole body sitting here. Contact with the ground, and maybe there's a sense of breathing through the soles of the feet. Palms of the hands. We're all just breathing bodies. As we sit here, practicing each, practicing our own individual practice, but also practicing as part of a community, aware of each other. Supporting each other. Just preparing to end this meditation. Giving yourself a little bit of time. Make that transition. Okay, so now we've got a space where if you want to share anything, ask anything around meditation, around the retreat, around any of the themes we're exploring, just what's going on. So if you want to remain anonymous, it's a bit late now because we're being recorded, but you could, if you don't want to be filmed asking a question, you can post it privately in the chat and then Pranunita can read it out. But otherwise, what I suggest you do is if you want to say something, just unmute yourself and then once we're going, you could either put in the chat that you want to or put an electronic or real hand up so we know that you want to speak. Or maybe you don't, and that's fine too. Sue.
I'd like to ask a question because I don't know whether it's going to evolve or whether I missed something yesterday, but I still don't understand the name of the retreat. Our bodies break the light, or if they could be some more explanation.
Do you want to take this part around the know, or should I? Okay. Well, Partly the name came because we knew we wanted to do a meditation retreat with a focus on the body, but also that sense that you can't really separate the body. You know, we've got these three retreats planned, and one will have more of a focus on the heart and one on the mind, but you can't really separate any of them out. We were going into all this stuff and imagination and poetry and metaphor, and I don't know, we were finding it really difficult actually to come up with a name for the retreat. And I remember Paramananda suggesting our bodies break light at one point. I just thought yes, and that was just because I loved the phrase. I loved the fact that you couldn't completely, you know, make sense of it. It evoked a lot of stuff on a much more, you know, poetic, metaphorical level, primal level for me. I just found myself emotionally, imaginatively, psychically, something resonated with it. And I know it comes from a poem, and I did read the poem. But I think a bit like a poem, you know, the phrase will mean different things to different people. And I think we, you know, we didn't want just to say the body or something. Wanted to make it a little bit more interesting, maybe. I don't know. What do you think, Paramananda?
Well, I don't know what I can add, really. I mean, I don't think there's any hidden significance other than what has an image. It's an image, isn't it? That I suppose for me, there's something about bringing together light, which is often associated with spirit. So, you know, in Buddhism, we talk about enlightenment, don't we? In many religious traditions, use the metaphor of light in one way or the other. And the body, so it's like what the relationship between the immaterial and the material, I suppose. And from our point of view as meditators, I think, you know, for me, it said something about the relationship between kind of abstract thought and kind of embodied feeling, you know, and how those two kind of relate to each other. I don't know if there's much more to say about it. I mean, we will have a poem at some point, perhaps. It's a very strong poem, but I don't think it would help explain the title. I mean, I think you know, I do a lot of retreats and I have to think of a lot of different titles. And I usually just try and find a title that's sort of, yeah, as Bodhi leader was saying, kind of imaginatively provocative rather than it being, you know. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if I can say much more than that about it, really. Maybe it will reveal itself as we go along. Yeah?
Thank you, Stu and Paramananda. Hi, it's Catherine. I just want to say, I thought that actually that was a really, really great title. And I've been kind of turning it over in my mind because I had quite a response to it, Our Bodies Break Light. And you know, this kind of work, it's revolutionary, you know, and it changes things, you know, our conditionality and this breaking light. Well, what is it doing? Well, it's like illuminating like our ignorance, you know, and that sense of separation that we have. So it's like this sense of the source of you know, when we can see more clearly of loving kindness, light and compassion bursting forth. And because the hidden secrets are in the body, and I really think this work is revolutionary, really, and especially working with conditionality and our hindrances and all conditions coming together. I think, you know, and it's trapped, all these energies are trapped in the body, and they want to break free. And I think it's a great title. So I just have this kind of mass of illumination and, you know, and maybe experiencing myself more fully in the world. And I thought it really touched my heart what you said last night, Paramananda, about kind of like being received by the earth as a, you know, as a womb, and that the earth kind of gives you everything, you know, rather than maybe sometimes feeling a sense of this kind of pathological loneliness that goes on. And it's just a great reminder, actually, you know, we're all loved, you know, we all received by the earth, you know, we've been born, you know, and like, how wonderful, you know. But anyway, so yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, well, you did better than me there. So well done. Yeah, but that's it, isn't it? You know, it's an image, and you know, I'm glad it you know, it's provocative in a way, isn't it? In a positive sense. You know. And the poem it comes from is quite interesting, actually, because it's actually about it's about various things, but partly about a blind person. Somebody's removed, he's actually taken out one of his eyes, and the other eye is got a cataract. And of course, if you've got cataracts, light starts splitting up. I don't know if anybody suffers from cataracts, but it does kind of break light up in a sense. You know.
So it doesn't have to be a question, it can just be something that you're sharing, an experience. Or... But I'm also curious if anybody did reflect on the question around, well, what we're looking for when we meditate, or what you were when you first started to meditate. Or identified that sense of longing, what that might be for.
Can I speak?
Yes, Sukhati, is that?
It is, yeah.
Go for it.
Well, I was reflecting that when I first went to meditate, it was to find peace of mind in the widest, in a wide sense, but perhaps it was to find peace of body as well. That's all I was reflecting.
That's interesting. So when you say peace of body, do you want to say more?
Well, that's just what I'm reflecting on. following the meditations and what Paramananda was saying earlier. There's no such thing as peace of mind, probably per se. It's an expression we use, but maybe it indicates something a bit wider than just mind.
Than just mind, that's interesting, isn't it? Big mind, little mind, what is just mind?
It's difficult, isn't it? These concepts, these words we have, which are never really quite adequate, are they? Especially a word like mind. And of course, in some ways, you know, you could say mind, you know, we could just as easily say that, you know, mind also includes body, or body also includes mind. It just depends which way around you want to look at it in a way. You know, a body without consciousness is not a, well, without any sort of consciousness is a dead body, isn't it? But, you know, even though these days we have all these kind of fantasies about disembodied minds, don't we? Or we have our particular, I mean, there's always been fantasies around disembodied mind, kind of religious fantasies. These days we have all these kind of technological fantasies, don't we, about a kind of disembodied mind, you know. But probably the two, you know, peace of mind in a kind of, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? You can sort of, most, you know, you can kind of read someone's mental state through their physical state, can't you? You know, we can tell when someone's mentally agitated by how they move and how they sit and how they hold themselves and their gestures. You know, I think that's the thing for me, that the body is always expressed in the mental state, if you want to put it that way around, you know. And what's so interesting about that is it means we can work with the mental state through the body. Yeah, it's not a sort of higher, you know, it's a kind of feedback loop between them, insofar as that dichotomy kind of stands up at all, you know, there's a kind of feedback loop between the two. So it's actually very difficult to work directly with mind, I think. And one way into working with mind is through working with body, you know, with our body. But of course, you know, I keep falling into this same dualism, which isn't really satisfactory, but we're kind of stuck with it in our language, in a way. You know? Just we keep saying body-mind complex or psychophysical organism, and it all gets a bit clunky. But yeah. But I think a lot of people these days are both agitated in both senses, aren't they? They're kind of agitated in mind and body.
Well, I think that thing about conditionality, you know, that anything that is agitating our mind will also affect our bodies, and anything that's agitating our body will affect our mind. And the body has a memory, and the body stores experience, and that can be positive. There may be joy, lots of energy in the body, but there can also be trauma and a lot of things in between. Yes, I mean, I think I used to think of mind being completely separate from the body, and my idea of mind was very much my cognitive mind, you know, thoughts, concepts. Even though I did have a lot of experience of different levels of awareness that weren't to do with thinking, I still had that idea of my mind being my thinking mind. And in a way, privileging it, prioritizing it, giving it more status than my body. And I was quite alienated from my body at that point. So I think there is something really healing about bringing together the two. So I can see Justine, you've got your hand up. You want to say something?
Yeah, thanks for that. Really lovely to be part of this online retreat, and I'm beaming in from New Zealand, which is why it's a bit dark outside at the moment. And just trying to gather together my thoughts. I was so fortunate to be out on an island yesterday for the opening puja, and sitting in some grass overlooking the sea underneath a tree. And for me, that's where I feel really deeply grounded and rooted. And then coming back into busy family and busy work life, we're really fortunate in New Zealand that we're sort of not in the sort of the lockdown and the constrictions that you're suffering. But I've been finding a lot of anxiety and some of that sort of trauma coming through when I'm not outside, actually. And so for me, the whole idea of gathering together and I think the integration part of the retreat, so that that unfolding process can occur, is what I'm really looking forward to. And it's something about that being able to feel part of and connected to that is really important for me. So I've really appreciated already just the way the practices are not split into the different ones that we sometimes learn at Tri Ratna around now it's time to do the mindfulness of breathing and then the metta and then the body scan. So really finding a way of being able to enjoy that flow, but also that connection with the earthing is helpful. So, and I've been surprised actually just with the chanting and the drumming when we've done it on the Thursday meditation space, just how, you know, unconsciously I think I privileged my mental intellectual working through, and I think that really allows me to just let go of that because I can't explain what happens in the body. So it takes a bit of faith, I think, that part, being able to allow that unfolding. So yeah, I just think I wanted to say thank you. I can't always join in the groups, and looking forward to catching up on the recordings that are at times I can't make it when I can.
Well, it's nice to have you here, all the way from New Zealand.
Thank you. It's been one of the real advantages of having these online sessions. So I really appreciate the connection with the wider Sangha. It's really wonderful.
We had some comments from Sasana Jyoti in the chat because his microphone is not working well. So he just wanted to share that what he was looking for in learning to meditate was to connect with his real self because he believed that there somewhere there was one, and also able to, or he knew that he sometimes didn't behave in a human way and very much wanted to. So that would have been his motivation for meditating.
And did it help with that, Sasana Jyoti? Yes. Oh, you can't. Okay, sorry.
Oh, you're still meditating, so we have to assume it did some good. Oh, helped in some way.
And also, having interacted with you, I think you do behave in a human way nowadays. So whether that's due to meditation or maybe you just had a view about that and you were all along. Yeah. But thank you for bringing that in, Paninita. And I noticed there's also a message from Boogs. My body is responding, unfolding to this retreat, and my mind seems to follow. Yes. I think I'm having a similar experience. in the meditation, something's happening, and it's much more happening on a body level, and then my mind kind of is playing catch up a bit. I think the body does have its whole level of awareness, its whole level of wisdom, and often does respond a lot earlier before we've even been able to be aware in a more cognitive way or put anything into words, and some things we can't even put into words. So, yeah.
I mean, we've decided, haven't we? I mean, in general, in the modern Western world, we've decided that consciousness is an exclusive property of brain, really. I mean, I'm not at all sure about that these days. So, you know, we've decided that, most people anyway, decided that trees or things like that can't have any sort of consciousness, and I must say I just think that's quite an erroneous position these days, you know, and our consciousness is somehow exclusive and kind of belongs to us. And I don't know if I mentioned this yesterday already, but these days I much more feel that consciousness is something we kind of participate in, you know, rather than that it's a bit like life itself. Well, and I don't even know what's the difference, you know. I mean, this is it, isn't it? This mystery of what consciousness is, you know, and these days I tend to think all life has some kind of consciousness, you know, that you can't actually have life without consciousness, you know. But I don't know, yeah. But I think we have a very kind of, the kind of typical sort of materialistic view, which probably most people here on this retreat don't necessarily have, but culturally, you know, idea that consciousness somehow arises dependent on brain activity. I'm not sure about that at all.
Well, I think from Buddhist point of view, consciousness is just like an element, you know, like there's earth, water, fire, air, space, and consciousness. So they're just consciousness. There's your consciousness, my consciousness, but it's all just part of consciousness.
Yeah.
Include trees and things.
That's quite a mysterious idea, isn't it? To say just consciousness, just an element. I mean, it is quite a mysterious thing, though. Yeah, sure, tradition were in some, yeah.
I suppose there's also always been some people who've been advocating that plants and trees have a consciousness, and, you know, doing experiments or studies showing that they, you know, they prefer Mozart to house music or something like that, or there was that Hidden Life of Trees that was very popular a few years ago, wasn't it? The guy, and he's sort of there's a lot there around how like trees will look after each other through the sort of like the root system they might, you know, and they'll feed each other and they'll give each other warnings when there's a predator or something. And Yeah.
Well, you've got, yeah, I mean, you've got these traditions from way back. Of course, most indigenous people feel they have direct communication with plants, you know. And that tradition is also part of the European tradition. I mean, probably the best known figure called Goethe believed this. You know. The whole Western tradition, you know, like the guy who did bark flower remedies, and you know, these people that feel that they directly communicate, you know, they have a direct communication from the plant. I was reading a book the other day about this anthropologist down in South America. No, he was some kind of anthropologist doing work into India, South America medicine, you know. And he couldn't work out how these people had managed to work. They combined various plants with various effects, you know, and he kept saying to them, well, how did you know that this plant and this plant put together would do it? And he just kept saying to him, well, you know, the plants tell us, the plants tell us. Mm. It's quite an interesting book, actually, but because in the end, you know, they say to him, if you want, they get so fed up with him asking this question. But they said to him, well, you know, if you really want to know, you're going to have to, you know, participate in the ceremony that we do. Which he did, and then was a, you know, understood what they were talking about, because he had the experience of direct communication with a plant, you know, which you know, is not at all far fetched from my point of view or my experience, and it's not at all far fetched to me now. But,
so I'm just aware of the time.
Yeah.
It's time to stop now. So thank you all for, again, coming, practicing, for sharing, asking questions. And yes, so for the rest of the retreat, we'll follow a fairly similar structure with a, you know, early morning, well, not that early, 8 o'clock meditation. Which will be quiet and unled, though I will probably ring bells for those people who might want to do it, use stages to do a particular practice. And then 10:30 till 12:30, there'll be a talk and then more practice. So tomorrow I'll be leading the 10:30 session, and then we'll have groups, meditation, and space for Q&A and whatever discussion in the afternoon. Just thinking if there's anything else that I've forgotten that I need to say. Praninita, is there anything? Praninita is much more in the case on these things than me.